This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Kevin Plexico. Kevin is the Senior VP of Research and Analysis Services for Input. Kevin, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for making the time. I know I didn't give you a lot of notice, but here we are anyway. Let's get a little background on you again and Input, please.
Sure. So I'm the Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services for a company that provides market research and information to companies doing business in the government space. That would include federal, state, and local governments across the U.S. We have about 2,000 member companies that use our services for everything from strategic planning to identification of specific opportunities and tracking them as they move through the procurement process.
Okay. Now, that's a beautiful segue because I want to talk about some of those opportunities that are currently coming down the pike. What are the major contracts that seem to be popping right now?
I think there's a handful of them that are garnering a lot of the interest of the industry. There's the Eagle II program, which is the replacement of the Department of Homeland Security's IT services contract that they've had in place for a few years. There's also the CIOSP3 program, which is a recompete of the GWAC contract that's been managed by NIH for several years. And that one is currently awaiting OFPP approval for whether it can continue as a GWAC. It's kind of interesting to see that one develop.
You got any feel for whether or not it's going to get it?
My sense is it's going to get approval. It would be hard for me to imagine them deciding that particular program is not worthy of a GWAC, given that it's pretty well used. It's been pretty popular with the agencies that have used it, and it does lend some competition to what GSA does.
How do the vendors like it?
I think the vendors who are on it like it. It's interesting. And there's a lot of them. What's interesting is if you look at, so GSA has indicated that they're going to use Alliant as their primary contract vehicle for IT services, which effectively makes Alliant and CIOSP2 the current only GWACs that are available for agencies. So if you were to not have CIOSP3, you'd effectively have one major GWAC for all agencies to use, and that would be the only one that's really available.
Okay.
So from that point of view, I think it'll likely get its approval. And what's interesting is the large companies that are on CIOSP2 are also on Alliant, but there are a number of small companies that have done very well under CIOSP2 that are not on Alliant. So this would potentially hurt small business more than it would the large businesses.
Okay. Other contracts coming down.
I think the other one that's got a lot of interest is the Veterans Affairs T4 acquisition. For the years, the VA has used other agencies' contracts, most notably GSA vehicles, for procuring its IT services, and they set up a new organization that basically staffed by some former CECOM procurement officials that will basically be setting up a new contract for VA to channel its IT services work through one of its own vehicles, and that's the T4 acquisition. So it's a multi-billion-dollar contract opportunity, very interesting in that they're reserving certain number of awards for service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses and veteran-owned small businesses. That's going to make this a really big competition for many companies.
Cool. Now, the last one I remember out of VA was Peaches. Was there anything in the intervening time?
That's the last major vehicle. The one that is sort of like a predecessor to T4 is the GITS GIT TSS program, but it hasn't been used that much relative to what we expect T4 to be used.
Okay, and excuse me for asking because I must have spaced. T4 is going to be a GWAC?
No, it'll be a VA run contract. Okay. Other agencies may use it, particularly where the VA and the other agencies' kind of mission intersects, like in the DOD and some of the health-related areas. But for the most part, it's going to be a VA vehicle.
Cool. All right. Anything else we got three biggies here, Eagle 2, CIO SP 3, and T4.
I guess another one I'd mention that's probably a bit further off is the NGEN program, the Navy's replacement of the NMCI contract held by, I guess it's HP now.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a little further out, but that one's going to be huge, and that's going to draw a lot of interest from industry.
Cool. All right. Now, we weren't going to go into this till the next segment, but we'll go into it now. You guys have a new study out just out a week or so. You're the IT forecast for 2010 to 2015. Number one, thank you for being brave enough to go out 5 years. You know, that's not an easy thing to do, because the agency documents will only take you out, what, 24, 36. But you've been doing the tea leaf reading for a long time now.
So, yeah, we've been doing our market forecast for over 15 years for the federal IT space. So we've got a long history of doing this. It's been one of the key components of our product offering for many years.
Okay, so let's do the overview of this study. Then we'll get into some of the meat, and then we'll tell people how to buy it.
Sure. So I think what's really interesting about this time in this era, from a government spending point of view, is the large percentage of gross domestic product that is consumed by government spending. If you combine federal, state, and local government contract or government spending, it represents about 40% of the nation's economy. And that is a level we haven't seen since World War II. So we're in an era where the role of government in the national economy has never been bigger, or at least been many, many years since it's been this big.
Not in our lifetime, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So from the point of view of companies doing business in this space, that obviously bodes well for the role that they're going to play in this economy and the growth opportunity and stability that I think is provided by doing business with government. So I guess I would start there. Now, from an IT point of view, which is what our forecast is based on, is looking specifically at information technology spending.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when you look at the overall growth of discretionary spending in the government space, the IT budget just about grows twice as fast as that. So that makes it very, very attractive as a market. It's very stable. I think over the last 20 years, it's only contracted maybe 1 or 2 years. So it's steady eddy as far as markets go compared to the commercial world, where you might not get some of the same stability. You get more wider swings. Certainly, you get more attractive growth rates occasionally, but you also get more aggressive contraction periodically.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, when I did my my keynote last week down in North Carolina, I emphasize that, you know, I used to be able to say that the government was a totally recession-proof market. Now I say it is almost the only recession-proof, nearly recession-proof market. And you know, we're not, because spending next year is going to drop, let's see, it was $80 billion this year, and it's projected to be $79.7 next year, something like that.
Yeah, but you have to peel that back a little bit, because there's a couple things that are going on within the 2011 budget. The first is, and mainly, the Census Bureau. They do a decennial census every 10 years, so they have a highly cyclical decade spending trend. And in 2011, the decennial census starts to wind down. So a big reason for the decline in the IT budget for 2011 is because of the wind down of the census, as well as the expiration of the funding for the Broadband Technology Opportunity Program that was funded under the economic stimulus. That's about a $4 billion line item that's going to be dropping out of the budget. So if you factor out the commerce budget's decline, you actually have about a 2.5% to 3% increase in overall spending.
We're recession-proof. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. You can explain away these things that look like they're not recessions.
Before you were born, there was a book popular. This was like in the 60s, How to Lie with Statistics. And I think every politician bought it then.
Ever since. Today,
but, anyway, we'll get it deeper into the study. I referenced a speech I did for the North Carolina Military Business Center down in RTP on Thursday, the 17th, I guess it was. I want to thank those people for having me down there, and it was an absolutely wonderful time. But my guest today is Kevin Plexico. He is the Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services of Input. And when we come back, we're going to get into the meat of this absolutely wonderful federal IT forecast 2010 to 2015. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Whoever said that you must only talk about politics or your brand of religion to have a great life? Whoever said that you should only have one interest? Explore different people and different perspectives. That's right, get out of the box. I'm Coach Lynn. Listen, no spin, no shock. I'm bringing a little flavor.
Listen for the Lynn Johnson Motivational Radio Show Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 12 noon on 1500 and 820 a.m.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion-resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
The internet, it's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology at Kaiser Permanente, we found some better uses. Like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower, and my guest today is Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis Services at Input. Kevin, between takes here, we were discussing the healthcare, and that's probably a really good place to start. So what's the healthcare reform going to do for IT literally across the board?
I would just point out that I think one of the key elements of President Obama's drive to reduce cost of healthcare is implementation of technology. So even before the healthcare reform legislation came on the scene, there was a clear direction to improve the use of technology in healthcare. And from the point of view of government, the government is one of the primary funders of healthcare across the entire economy. They are the largest payer, the largest provider through VA and the Defense Department. So they have more to gain than probably any other organization in terms of financial benefit from improving the efficiency of healthcare. And technology is probably one of the, the best opportunities that we have in that particular industry to improve the efficiency of the way things are done. So I think even before healthcare reform, there was a lot to gain for the federal government in driving technology into healthcare. But what's interesting is with the healthcare reform legislation, there are going to be monumental changes to things like Medicare and Medicaid, how benefits are provided, how citizens enroll in healthcare plans, fundamental changes to how healthcare plans are managed and how they have to comply with federal regulations. And so there's two big organizations that are going to benefit greatly from in terms of funding from the healthcare reform. The first is obviously CMS, the organization in HHS that's responsible for managing the Medicare and Medicaid programs. But the other one, which is probably a surprise to many people, is the IRS. They have a huge role in basically collecting the fees that are going to underwrite the cost of the expansion of healthcare to the uninsured and underinsured that that President Obama has proposed covering under the healthcare reform. And that is going to require major changes to the tax systems to collect the taxes, the fees, the penalties, and the compliance requirements associated with the cost of providing health care. So I think those two organizations are going to get between $5 and $10 billion over the next 5 to 10 years to cover the cost of them managing the implementation of the health care reform legislation.
Well, that kind of makes sense to me, the CMS side, certainly, because I remember about 3 or 4 weeks ago we posted in one of my groups on LinkedIn an announcement that CMS was looking for 100 new fresh bodies in the IT arena, literally across the skill set board.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this to me is that none of this cost is currently in the IT budgets that we've seen from the agencies, nor is it in the budget that the 2011 budget that President Obama has put forward. So one of the things that's interesting when you look at the budget requests, because they're so far ahead of when the actual budget year occurs, they are almost always conservative relative to what is actually spent. So we've looked at IT spending over the last 15, 20 years, and there's only 1 year where the requested spending level was above the actual spending level. They almost always spend more than they expect.
So how do they make up the difference?
They divert money from other areas. They have funding overruns that have to get funded. There's supplementals. There's all kinds of additional funding levels that don't go through traditional appropriations that Congress authorizes. So that's where they make up the difference.
Man, it's a shell game, but
well,
it's a
challenge. I'll put it this way: it's a challenge in our government budgeting process when you're trying to predict what your budget requirements are 18 to 24 months in advance of the year that you're talking about.
Right, and then it goes back to the argument that why the heck are we on a one-year budget for something so ridiculously big when, you know, when was the last time a budget was passed on time? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but it's been a long time.
94.
That was 2 years after I joined input. 18 years ago.
It's it's a long time, and it's the only thing that they are congressionally mandated to do is to pass a budget. But you know, they got a shell game there too. It's called a continuing resolution. We don't have to go there, but I just did, and I'm not asking for comments from you. So how's healthcare IT reform going to impact the contracting world? Who's going to be the players here?
Well, I think you have to think about the government's role in healthcare. They're a payer, a provider, and a protector. You can think about the roles of the different agencies involved. So from a provider point of view, you think about where healthcare is delivered at the federal level. That's obviously in the Veterans Affairs, operating one of the largest healthcare systems in the world, and also Defense Health. Those are the two major players in terms of providing healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about that is that in the federal world, health IT is actually well developed relative to the rest of the healthcare economy. You've been into your doctor's office. I go to my doctor's office. I see the walls of shelves of documents that are stored. You can tell that IT has not gotten to their world beyond basic payment processing.
They don't want that particular cheese moved.
Yeah, and they don't have the funding to pay for it. There's no incentive for them to modernize because they still get the same fees from reimbursement fees from the insurance companies.
Right.
So then you think about the role of payer. That's where you have organizations like CMS and the federal government. That's probably what's going to change the most from the federal perspective relative to healthcare reform and modernization, because they have to find better ways, more efficient ways to pay, to enforce compliance, to drive and incent healthcare providers to adopt technology to operate more efficiently. And so from a technology provider point of view, yes, there's opportunity to support the federal agencies in the provider area. But at the end of the day, all that technology investment is going to be at the healthcare provider area, and that's where you're looking at local hospitals, state hospitals, as well as the clinics that are funded by federal and state and local agencies.
Okay, let's back up to the first segment, the contracts. Is the T4 contract going to be a significant player for the VA side of this?
Absolutely. It will be a key mechanism that the VA uses for funding improvements and modernization of its healthcare related systems.
Okay, and
well as its other benefit systems.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be used tremendously across the board, but certainly for this. What about CIO SP3 for CMS? Is that going to be a vehicle?
I think it'll be a vehicle. CIO SP has not typically been used as a primary tool for health IT acquisition. It's been used for a lot of IT support services, but you'd be hard-pressed to look at it and say that is a health IT system or a health record system that's getting funded. It has been used quite a bit for some of the standard development that's been related to the economic stimulus. So a lot of the ONC organization that is developing standards around healthcare systems, health IT, information exchange, it's been used for that type of thing, but that's a relatively small percentage of the overall value of CIOSP. CMS has tended to use their own contract vehicles and their own contracts for a lot of its work.
Okay, so they, I'm assuming then they have vehicles in place?
Yes, they do. And they have a number of contracts that they use.
Cool. And I'm assuming these are not open season contracts.
Not to my knowledge. I think most of the ones they use are, you know, your traditional 5-year contracts, and they just drive changes through those to the vendors that support them. And when those contracts up, like any other agency, they compete them.
So if we have the mid-sized companies that own those vehicles and we see a lot of money migrating towards CMS, we can probably anticipate a little M&A activity in that arena.
Yeah, I think there's going to be opportunity for vendors in CMS to support them. But what's going to also be interesting is, as you know, Medicaid systems are operated by the states.
Yeah.
So CMS plays a big role in funding the states, and I think you'll see a lot of changes to the state systems as well, which will be an opportunity for all those firms that manage the Medicaid information systems at the state level.
Man, you know, just when you think things are slowing down, huh? My guest today is Kevin Plexico, who is Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis Services at Input. You can find him at input.com. You can find this report by going to input.com. And I only have the executive overview, and I got to tell you, this is one meaty son of a gun. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Well, you know, Facebook has been having somewhat of a problem because they're just sharing your data with everybody. Deactivation is not the same as deletion.
The information is still out there.
And what they try to do is they try to urge you to deactivate, and they try to keep you away from that nasty deletion page. You see, deactivation simply turns off your account but does not remove the data. The idea behind deactivation is that someday you'll be back.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Rock Creek, an award-winning restaurant in Bethesda where every week is Restaurant Week. Al Sospiro, Trattoria Romana, and Wine Bar in Olney. Come and enjoy authentic Roman cuisine, excellent wines, and a truly unique dining experience. And Morty's Deli, mouth-watering pastrami, potato pancakes, and D.C.'s best matzo ball soup. Morty's a Washington tradition. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Attention, CIOs. There's a cyberspace battle going on.
The threat is everywhere.
And you may be losing.
You should be afraid. Very afraid.
The only way to solve your cybersecurity threat is our way.
Everybody's selling cybersecurity these days. It's all about fear and drama. At HP, we believe cybersecurity isn't about fear. It's about managing threats while still achieving your mission objectives. For us, cybersecurity means actively managing risks and costs and enhancing the freedom of action of your organization. Every day, HP helps our government and commercial clients securely achieve their missions with speed, precision, and confidence.
In cyberspace, no one can hear you scream.
Take the fear out of cyber threats and enable your organization to thrive in an uncertain environment. Visit HP at hp.com/go/cybersecurity. Outcomes that matter. Copyright 2010 Hewlett-Packard Development Company, LP.
The Federal Drive has a new sound. Tom Temin is joined by Amy Morris weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy cover the activities important to federal managers, HR, program management, budgeting, acquisition. The Federal Drive delivers fast-moving, crisp, insightful interviews good for busy feds dealing with political change. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Kevin Plexico, who is Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input. You can find them in the study that we're discussing at input.com. The study is the Federal IT Forecast 2010 to 2015. And, you know, if you need a crystal ball to figure out where your BD people should be focusing over the next 3 or 4 years, this is it, boys and girls. Pick it up. It's only $49.95. Well worth it. So over the break, we were talking about the issues that Mr. Obama actually brought to the table here, the transparency in the procurement process, the changing role of acquisition, and, you know, just making it more public. So how's this going to impact our community, or how is it already impacting our community?
I think it's going to impact in a few ways. If you think about the trends we're seeing relative to the contracting world, there's the trend of transparency, which has the implication of vendors providing more information than they've typically had to provide to the government for the government to turn around and make it open for citizens to access. So that's one component, and that's starting to bleed down into subcontractors' responsibilities for reporting as well. So one of the changes that came out, and we saw this originally under the economic stimulus, was requiring subcontractors to have reports, what they call sub-recipient reporting versus just the recipients of direct funding. And they've indicated at OMB that they intend to drive those same requirements across all government contracts, not just the economic stimulus. So one of the implications of that, for example, is requiring companies that do a certain amount of their business with the federal government to report the salaries of their top five executives, even if they're a privately held company. So this is, you know, not the type of information that most companies are required to provide to their customers and for their customers then to turn it around and make it available to the public. So I think that's an additional string attached of doing business with the government is this reporting and compliance requirement for some of their transparency roles.
Okay. Now, we had a not dissimilar rule for 8As once upon a time, and I think it's still in place, that 8A CEOs were only allowed to make X number of dollars a year. Do I remember that right?
I'm not familiar with that particular requirement, so it wouldn't surprise me if they had the requirement around what their salary could be. In this case, it's not really dictating what their salaries should be. It's just saying if you pay them a salary, we need to know what that salary is.
Yeah, maybe it was the net worth thing. I forget. Not my end of the business anyway. We know that.
Right.
So again, take this a little deeper on for the entire acquisition process. What does this mean for the vendor community?
Well, I think the vendors for this particular one, vendors are going to have a greater burden of reporting information they're not used to reporting. Of participating in audits. They'll probably have more audits, more reviews of the work, the nature of the work, how the work was performed. They'll have more compliance requirements around things like conflict of interest, other human capital requirements around how they pay people, how they manage people. There's a lot of strings attached to doing business with the federal government, and those strings have been getting more attached, not less. Congress has been adding more and more burden to the companies that do business with government in exchange for their privilege of doing business with government.
And they aren't allowing the cost to be passed through.
Well, I would argue that it probably is effectively passed through in the form of higher rates and higher costs for products. But it doesn't have a line item associated with it.
Right, but we have the rebirth of the reverse auction here too. And I was talking to somebody down in North Carolina who said that they saw one reverse auction where the government was looking for a program manager, and the bidding was down to $55 an hour. And we're thinking, you know, what kind of PM are you going to get for $55 an hour?
Yeah, I think if you boil this down to a pricing discussion, then the government's in trouble.
Seriously, you know, and they may win very briefly on the front end, but they will lose rapidly for the program itself.
Right.
So, and it won't be a win scenario. It'll be a seeming win scenario.
Right. I think the other area that we've seen a lot of discussion is, and I would say rhetoric, is around the insourcing movement. A lot of the contractors in the community are very uncomfortable and nervous about how Congress has been rolling out all kinds of reporting requirements and restrictions on outsourcing and seeking to drive more of the hiring inside of government. From our point of view, as we look at the demands for service, what areas they're defining as inherently governmental, we think most IT vendors have very little to worry about this, except for possibly in the area of cybersecurity, where the federal government is hiring pretty dramatically. But most of their targeting for the insourcing area has been around things like security, acquisition management, program management, areas like that.
Okay, now let's talk about the hiring. The OPM and OMB are trying to work really hard to speed up the process of hiring professionals. Is there an attractiveness to the government for people with that level of technical expertise?
I think there is in a down economy. I think when the rest of the economy is south, obviously the fact that the federal government is hiring, and not only hiring but also provides quite a bit of stability, makes it easier for the federal government to hire otherwise. But when the rest of the economy picks up, I think it gets more challenging for the federal government to compete, because they can't have the same flexibility in salaries that the private sector has. They don't have some of the same opportunities to provide innovative work that some of the private sector organizations get. So I think it's more challenging for the federal government in those situations when the economy is doing well. And then when the economy goes south, it becomes easier for them.
Okay. Let me ask a slightly different question. And I know it's not meant to be political, but I'm sure it's going to have political overtones. Before last year, have you ever heard the phrase inherently governmental?
I think I heard it about 2 years ago.
Okay.
The first time.
Yeah. Maybe I should go back and read 1984. Maybe it showed up there. I find it a particularly Orwellian phrase, but again, I'm not asking for political comment. But yeah, and I hear people now on this station saying, well, I've been talking about this for years and years. And I'm going, no, you haven't. But back to the transparency issues. How much burden is this putting on the contractor world?
I think it probably depends on who you ask. I think larger companies probably are having a greater burden and challenge because they have so much more activity to report and keep track of, while smaller companies probably don't have quite the same burden. But I think there's definitely a threshold of pain that a company needs to tolerate to be willing to do business with the federal government. And if you're finding that threshold of pain is more than the value of revenue you're getting out of it, it's going to drive businesses away. So I think the implication of this is the large established contractors who have already identified that the pain is and how they're managing it, they're going to stay in the market. They're going to be the ones who are going to be available to the government. And some of the smaller companies that might not have the patience for the pain might decide, I never want to do business with the federal government because it's just too darn hard. And I think that's unfortunate for federal agencies, because there could be very good contractors that would otherwise do great work for them, but they've put such a burden on those companies to do business with them that it becomes unpalatable.
And it wasn't that there weren't sufficient burdens already. The ability for small businesses to enter this market, as again, we discussed in North Carolina, we've been talking about for years, it's an 18-month window.
Right. And you know, you and I have talked over the years about acquisition reform. Most times when I'm out in the market talking about acquisition reform, companies come up to me and say, oh, so acquisition reform, that means it'll finally be easier to do business with government. and right now, I think we're in an acquisition reform environment that is definitely not going in that direction. It's going in the direction of making it more difficult, and not only more difficult for the vendors, but frankly, more difficult for the acquisition workforce as well. There are more strings attached. There are more requirements. There are more steps they're going to have to go through to get just a basic contract awarded.
Right, and it's not like they're not overburdened already.
Right. So we have over the last 5 years increased contracting by about 50%. Yet the acquisition workforce has been basically flat.
At best, yeah.
So. Yeah, and they've announced that they're going to increase it 5%, which I'm sure is step in the right direction, but still not kind of in line with the challenge that they have ahead of them.
Kind of reminds you of that thumb in the dike, eh?
Right, and you know, that gets, I guess, to the next key trend that we've seen is the huge rise in the use of task order based contracts and delivery order based contracts. You know, these multiple award IDIQ contracts that are established by agencies and GSA to drive business through them, where they end up with a limited set of companies that compete for billions and billions of dollars of work.
So let's pick that up on the other side then. That is a great topic to pursue. My guest today is Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services for Input. You can find him at input.com. You can find the report at input.com. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
The U.S. is better off with a new strategic arms reduction treaty with Russia than without it. That's what Secretary of Defense Robert Gates told the Senate Armed Services Committee. Joint Chiefs Chairman Mike Mullen also urged the committee to ratify the agreement, saying the treaty is full of support for uniformed leaders. They say the agreement reduces the U.S. and Russian strategic nuclear forces in such a way that it strengthens the stability of the U.S.-Russian relationship. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a lot of talk about thinking outside the box. But what about thinking inside the box? Airink is a company that looks at every angle when solving problems. In fact, Airink recently helped convert regular cargo containers into sophisticated air traffic and communications control facilities for use abroad, combining the shipping box and actual equipment into one turnkey system. Imagine that. Log on to www.arinc.com to learn more.
The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability is a series featuring a panel of renowned government and technology industry experts sponsored by Cisco. The second panel in the series focuses on the role of confidence in 21st century workforce collaboration to improve decision-making, employee engagement, and performance. Panelists discuss how varying levels of decisions require different means of communication, interactions, and solutions. Panelist Gerald Charles Jr., Director of Public Sector Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco, commented.
Expectations are different. So that means, you know, for us as professionals delivering an environment, business processes, and technology to support that, we have to really recognize that. And we have to, again, going back to providing a continuum of solutions and a continuum of processes, because the confidence that we have, or the greater confidence that we have in something, the quicker we're going to make a decision. So if we're doing that now in a very collaborative environment with teams that are spread all over the place, we've got to recognize that continuum of strategies or video strategies that will support that.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword work.
If you're a federal manager, this year you're being asked to open up government by increasing transparency, enhancing collaboration, and improving citizen engagement. Don't take on this challenge alone. Join hundreds of your colleagues at Excellence in Government on July 19th and learn about the latest best practices and new technologies that are required to make open government a reality. Visit excelgov.com today to reserve your place at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input. We're discussing, among other things, the current Input study that's available, Federal IT Forecast 2010 to 2015. And it is, again, one meaty document, and it's not the only one we're going to discuss. We're going to discuss the data center consolidation. But we left off with the task order issue. Pick that up again, please.
So I guess for just backdrop, as we identified a couple minutes ago, you've seen this huge increase in the amount of dollars that have been contracted, yet flat levels of employment in the contract workforce. So the question for agencies is, how can we continue to grow what we spend and leverage what we have to drive more money through this contracting system? And what we've seen is a key way of dealing with that is a huge increase in the use of task order-based vehicles, IDIQ contracts awarded to multiple companies. And we've seen that business grow from back in 2006, less than $20 billion, to now it's about $35, $40 billion in spending that's on those types of contracts. So it's growing way faster than the market.
That's more than the GSA schedules, Garner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, we're seeing many organizations move away from the GSA vehicles to their own vehicles. We've seen this especially in the larger organizations. So I think the biggest example I can point to is the DHS using the Eagle contract and effectively moving a lot of their IT services contracting through Eagle. And now we're seeing it again with the Veterans Affairs T4 acquisition. They're going to set up their own contract and drive their business through their own contract vehicle and all likelihood move away from their use of the GSA vehicles.
Now, is this going to reinvigorate the Loretta Doan argument that GSA should be controlling all of this stuff?
I think you'd have to make the case that it's not efficient, and I don't know that that's an easy case to make. I mean, the buyers in the federal government go where the path of least resistance is, and that's one of the reasons they're going to these contract vehicles. It's not because they just don't like GSA. They just find these vehicles more convenient, more accessible for them, easier for them to use. Obviously, their acquisition shops are driving them to use them. So I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue that these vehicles aren't efficient.
Right, and you can use the soup argument. We're in, what, year 17 and iteration 4.
So, yeah, and that contract is growing like gangbusters.
And it's one of the best-run contracts according to both buyers and sellers in the government market. So
yeah, it's very easy for companies to add products to that contract, and they can do it much more quickly than they can the GSA schedules.
Okay, let's migrate. You've got another study coming out in the not distant future on exactly when.
It'll be in August.
Okay.
And it'll be around the data center consolidation initiative that that President Obama and Vivek Kundra have announced, driving agencies to reduce the number of data centers they have, making the remaining ones presumably bigger and more modern and more protected, while trying to get rid of some of the smaller ones that they think are taking up too much power, driving too much cost out of the federal IT budget.
Okay, I remember when I started in this business, Lynn Bateman told me that one DOD agency had about 140 data centers. And this was just one DOD component, you know, admittedly one that needed a lot of data. But how many data centers are out there right now?
Well, according to OMB, there's about 1,100. Though how you define a data center is an interesting discussion.
Okay.
in its own right.
Okay.
I think what's clearly what's interesting about this is that they've had several data center consolidation initiatives in the past. In fact, I'll just give a little anecdote. When I was looking at the OMB website for the data center consolidation memo that was published, I found one and started reading it and realized it was a data center consolidation announcement from back in 1995. trying to drive agencies to cut down the number of data centers.
Was that the GSA Grand Design Program? Is that?
I don't remember if it had a name associated with it. I just remember the time frame in the memo. What was interesting then, they defined a data center in terms of FTE, how many headcount was supporting a processing capacity that they had associated with it. And today they're defining it in terms of square footage of the room in which the servers are in.
Okay, now that's intriguing because obviously the room size is radically reduced.
Yeah, but they still draw a lot of power, I guess.
Oh yeah, yeah, and maybe that's the next defining moment. How much power does it draw? So what's your report going to point out on the data center? What's your gut here?
Yeah, what we're going to be looking for is what is the impact of the consolidation on how agencies spend their money. Is it really going to provide them the savings they predict, or are those savings going to be reinvested back into other investments? You know, from our point of view, the IT budget, it does not necessarily need to be shrunk. It probably needs to grow. There's lots of opportunity for improving in the efficiency of government and automating things today that are not automated. So from our point of view, these dollars that are ultimately saved should be reinvested back in the agency's mission from a technology point of view. But I think there's a lot to be examined around who the winners and losers are going to be. Our hypothesis is that a lot of the smaller data centers are run by smaller companies and the large data centers are run by large companies. So here again, we're going to have a consolidation that could have a bigger impact on small companies than the large companies, as the large companies get bigger work and more work associated with the large data centers.
Okay, now the impact on the smaller companies on the contracting side of things, does this mean that the CEOs are going to be driving the primes to find the right small business partners? Is that how we're going to continue to meet the small business set-aside goals?
I think it's the only way they can. We've definitely seen an increasing percentage of the prime contract dollars go from small businesses to large businesses. And OMB is, I think, aware of that and trying to take steps to reverse that. But from what we've seen, it hasn't had much effect so far.
Well, you know, when we were talking earlier about the increased transparency leading to more and more paperwork on the front end, this is not attracting a great deal of people.
No, I think whenever you have consolidation, you're by definition, driving to reduce number of suppliers and reduce number of providers of technology.
Yeah.
And less opportunity for smaller companies to play a smaller role in certain areas. So that's the direction we're going with the consolidation. Obviously, it's in the government's best interest from an efficiency point of view, but it's not necessarily the best thing for small businesses that might have been depending on the federal government for some of its revenue.
Okay. Well, we're running a tad short here, so give me some final thoughts.
Well, I think the other area that we've seen is around the discussion of some of the emerging technologies that have been discussed, like cloud computing. And we've probably seen more events on cloud computing in the past year. People now know we're not talking about the weather anymore. And all of the discussion is around a component of the budget that represents probably less than $1 billion in spending on an 80 or $90 billion budget. So it's gotten an inordinate amount of attention for a segment of the market that is so small. And from our point of view, the way this market is going to develop for vendors that participate in that area is it's really probably going to end up being around the private clouds as opposed to public clouds, meaning that the agencies are going to be using their existing data centers to incorporate cloud offerings and then extend those cloud offerings to their government customers that are using it. So it's going to be the same infrastructure companies doing very well, improving those government offerings and enabling delivery of cloud services through those data centers versus the government using kind of pure cloud technology, at least for the lion's share of the dollars. We'll see them increase the utilization of public cloud, but it won't be the same extent that they'll use it for the private cloud within themselves.
Cool. Kevin, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing the information about the new report and the upcoming report.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Always a blast. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. My guest has been Kevin Plexico, who is the Senior VP of Research and Analysis Services for Input. You can find Input and this report, and when the next one comes out, at input.com. This is not my day job. If you need some of the most experienced sales and marketing advice available, give me a call. You can find me at federaldirect.net. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off-center. With AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Here's Joseph Grace, President and CEO of Grace Associates, on the Cyber Warfare Prevention, Securing Your Software and Applications panel, sponsored by Fortify Software.
Most of the breaches now are coming from the inside. They're coming from when they didn't have a whole lot of information as to how people were going to hack in. And we talk about hackers as though they are 13-year-old kids sitting in their underwear. But what we really have is pretty sophisticated programmers that have learned to take advantage of any of the vulnerabilities that are written in this code. And we really don't have a feel for how it was written. We've just been using it.
To listen to the program made possible by Fortify Software in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Your mission-critical IT system just got hacked. Confidential data stolen. Could this have been prevented? Fortify Software Security Assurance Solutions are helping government organizations secure the software they depend on to run their agency's most mission-critical operations. Find the vulnerabilities inside your software. Fix them quickly and cost-effectively. Fortify your applications with security. Visit fortify.com. That's fortify.com.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind. But are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in home monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month. And there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has over 40 years of industry-leading experience. Ackerman monitors your home from its UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Ackerman was recently recognized as the National Dealer of the Year from over 30,000 companies. Get the most qualified professionals monitoring your home for just $18.95 per month. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. Federal employees call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service. Call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com.
Morning stretches, biking to work, quick walks at lunch, shopping at the farmer's market, getting all your antioxidants, flavonoids, and omega-3s while staying properly hydrated. Well, don't forget 8 hours of good sleep. Trying to live a healthy lifestyle doesn't leave a lot of time for managing your health care. That's why Kaiser Permanente offers members My Health Manager, an online tool you can use to proactively manage health care for you and your family members 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Have a question for your doctor? Email your doctor's office and get a response. Make, cancel, or reschedule routine appointments. Get test results, check recent immunization records, view most of your medical history, and order prescription refills. All in a secure environment, all at your convenience, all so you have more time to thrive. To learn more about My Health Manager, visit kp.org. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
WFED Washington, WWE.